Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello, I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the sixth president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in Lichtenstein. I'm running on one side a financial services company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, mm-hmm. We are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover impact investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Banerjees.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone. And for our viewers from Far East, and this time even Hong Kong is joining in, good night.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. Today is week 13 of season 2, and it's a show where we interview policymakers, investors, experts, activists, impactful businesses on the topic of impact investing. And today, actually, the viewers are going to learn two very important points. First is how and why to invest in impactful businesses. And second is how can the impactful business, or if you are an entrepreneur, attract funds and raise capital successfully. Before we start, Ben, would you like to show or to tell us your story, maybe?
Oh, I start with a story. Before I start with a story, I just want to talk about the project that we started when my sister Joya passed away a few weeks, and it's nearly now 2 months ago. We started supplying hospital goods and medicines to rural parts of India. So all support and for the project is most welcome. And for those who have already supported us, thank you very, very much. You can find all information about this on the website camomile.ch. So that is camomile.ch.
Of course, thanks from my side as well. And before we start, actually, I want to remind you not to miss any show, just subscribe on YouTube channel for the show, so you can always watch the recording of anything we are discussing here. And about the course, you know, because we are frequently organizing courses for entrepreneurs, for businesses which are growing, and actually not only Swiss people gone through the course, but also now Nordics, India, and also Africa and East European countries like Ukraine and LATAM, Mexico are joining in. So we are happy to see that our course is expanding. And it's a course where people can learn how to create a successful business with high returns, but also high social and environmental impact, how to fundraise, how to structure the business on all these topics. And keep watching Camomile. The next course will be announced soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Now the story.
Okay. So what really amazes me is the mankind's immense potential to not learn from its mistake. It really never seems to amaze me. So now, companies like BlackRock has joined organizations like TPG, Bain Capital, KKR, Blackstone, even Morgan and Stanley in creating a dedicated impact vehicle. Issue is, it is completely mudding the yet clean ecosystem of impact investment. So what I'm afraid of is that this will hijack the recent movement which all institutional financiers are having, that they are slowly looking into impact funds. So instead of looking into really good funds, they will all start looking into large funds.
Of course, impact investing is so cool. So everyone wants to get in, you know, even if they're not impact, still they want to get in. So there must be a way.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. But at least your dream is coming true that impact investment has become the new norm.
Hallelujah.
But the issues the large institutions are facing are also interesting. So while you have well-established impact funds like EQT Partners, Bridge Fund Management, they have discovered that only having dedicated team with impact and ESG focus doesn't really work, as they become extremely process, procedure, reporting, and compliance focused. On other hand, we have institutions like BlackRock, where only the return and bonus focused.
Yeah, so we are creating the next stage actually now, you know, that that highly commercially private fund managers are also looking their impact, which is a good news.
Exactly. So that's where when large firms which have a long investment track records like BlackRock suddenly coming in with the new regulations to assess companies, whether a company is good or bad to invest in, it will not work. This will take time to change the mentality. So I just wanted to finish
because
my story.
It's a consciousness shift. It's not just a little transformation. Yeah. It is a big transformation.
Yeah, but when you have an organization where it is completely bonus focused since last 10 years or 20 years, it will take time.
I know. I've been in one of those.
So I just want to finish by quoting Megan Starr, who is Carlyle's global head of impact, when he said, impact comes from thinking about where sustainability macro themes intersect with where profitability is in the industry. Before we invite our guest in, I would just like to show them a video of yours, which explains why impact investment is important for our people and planet.
That's great. I love those videos because then I can just chill out and watch it. Why would you care about impact investing and getting engaged into this sector? I think by now, also after COVID, everyone realized that indeed we are facing enormous amount of various kind of issues on this planet. And it's not only climate change, it is also waste problem, plastic in the oceans, accessible education, and many more represented by sustainable development goals. As you know, governments, charities, and philanthropic capital were trying to solve it for many decades, but somehow it's not enough. So we need private investors, private capital to get engaged into impact investing to support. And I believe that together we can indeed reach sustainable development goals. But it's not only about help. There are enormous opportunities in this sector. You know, the market size is growing. By now it reached already $800 billion. There are more than 1,720 organizations in that. And organizations such as European Investment Bank, they are allocating trillions of euros to support climate change projects and initiatives. And there are many more banks and financial institutions, governments are moving into this sector. So only lazy is not in impact investing right now. So it is a perfect time for you to start your impactful business. And if you're an investor, of course, invest now. Last but not least, I wanted to mention that you have also advantages as impact investor or as social entrepreneur, because national governments are providing also technical and financial support for such entrepreneurs. So there are enormous amount of resources available. And it's not only money, it's also expertise. You also decrease your risk immensely when you are in impact investing sector, as regulation is also catching up. And last but not least, the goodwill of people. It is always easier to hire someone for a purpose-driven enterprise than for profit only. So the world is changing. Get into impact investing sector.
I just wanted to add something to this. Today it was in the news. I think it was a report at WEF. It's a report of World Bank, where they wrote that by the end of this decade, so by the end of 2030, the way we are going, our international GDP is going to shrink by above 10%. Mm-hmm. So that means the corona, which wiped out 4%, you can see the damage caused, now is going to shrink more than 10%, with basically the most hit will be on Asia and Africa.
I knew we cannot avoid some negative news. But anyway, so imagine that the most of our viewers might remember that we brought in our TV show one of the renewable energy investors and also a renewable energy project together. Also, last week we had an amazing fund which invests in Africa, one of the world famous ones, and also potential target for them to invest in. But today we have a different case, and to be honest, let's make it local, right? So we were traveling around the world, but I think it's time also to show something from Switzerland. So,
yeah. So with this, we welcome our guests. Both are from Switzerland. So one is a major fund and other is a project.
And they are not strangers. Actually, the fund has already invested in this project. Isn't it cool?
Exactly.
So Christine Terbrack Forstener, please join us as well as Tim Becker. Hello. Hi. Welcome.
Welcome, Christine and Tim.
How are you guys? Where are you right now?
Very good.
I'm great. I'm based in the middle of Zurich. And actually, Tim is not based in Switzerland. Also, the company, Sweta and Ben, they're actually based in Germany. Yeah, but very close by. Tim.
Exactly.
In the neighborhood. That's great.
Exactly. And my dad is in Switzerland. So now in the Euro Championship, I'm voting for Switzerland since Germany is not left in the tournament.
Don't get started on it. This year, it has been a disaster. Netherlands is out. France is out. Germany is out. We have no one.
Well, Switzerland is still in, and we are on Paradeplatz here, so in the middle of Switzerland. So let's support Switzerland this time.
Yeah, exactly. When is the match?
Tonight.
Ah.
I think in 3 hours against Spain.
Okay, let's hurry up.
Quick. Okay, before we start, let me quickly introduce you guys to our audience. So I start with Christine. You are a doctor, Christine Terbrack Forstener, and not just a Christine. You are the founder of and a CEO of T Impact Capital, which is an independent and powered by Women Impact Fund advisor based in Zurich in Switzerland. You are so passionate and you are my dear friend, so I know your passion. It's really inspiring how you put it all together on the feet and with your amazing experience, more than 15 years track record in financial services sector. And I know it's not easy, but you manage that. You have the amazing fund, which invests in Europe. And really, congrats, first of all, on that. And also very important to mention that you are also a lecturer, a keynote speaker, and you have also an NGO, which is successfully running in North Ghana since 2009, which is called Brave Aurora.
Yeah. And what I wanted to add is that she also has a cum laude from Harvard Law School.
Well,
I was happy that I could pass the university.
This is why she's on the other side, right? Exactly. As a guest. And we are just here, you know, making fun. All right. And Tim Becker, you are the founder and managing director of Vital. It's a company who is a digital and deposit-free reusable packaging system based for takeout. Okay, so if you are taking away some food, then you can use your system, and it's much more user environmentally friendly, of course.
And user-friendly.
And user-friendly. So this is amazing, you know, especially in summer, everyone is eating outside, and I know from my own experience in Zurich, you know, there's so many cafes and also people are sitting at the lake and having this plastic or even carton things, which they are throwing away. And it happens every single day. So I was thinking, not a couple of years back, many years back, like it would be cool to have something like that. And here you go. I mean, people are connected and it's great. Congratulations to your amazing project that, you succeeded, and I hope you will scale it up in many different countries. So welcome to the show, and we will ask you many more questions, of course, to get to know you guys better.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome.
Indeed, thank you so much, Sweta and Ben. Really looking forward.
So, Christian, can you just introduce yourself and your fund to our audience? And more importantly, why did you start this journey?
Yeah, so good afternoon, everybody. My name is Christine Terbrack-Forsting. I'm married to a Dutchman. That is why I have this long name, but originally, weird long name, but originally I come from Austria. I'm now in Zurich since more than 15 years. I'm basically, as you've kindly introduced myself, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Qi Impact Capital. Qi is like the positive life energy, but for us, Qi means also conscious, holistic, and impactful investing. Why? And what we are doing basically is we are we've launched and we are advising a Luxembourg-based impact fund that is investing in, we call them core regenerative companies in Europe that help solve basically the most burning issues of our time. We can tap into that later in more detail, but that is basically what the fund does. It's basically an impact venture fund with a strong tech component, deep impact, and attractive financial returns. I've started this journey? Well, I must say probably to start off, I think what really drives me to do this is and I think I can speak there really for our whole team, is that we really want to make that shift towards a regenerative economy a reality with impact investments. And I've shared with you that Qi has in its part also consciousness, so basically conscious investing. And by that, we mean basically, or I see myself also as a conscious investor. And what I mean by that is that I want to invest in root causes, right? Root causes and solve them, and not only investing in symptoms and really investing with systemic lens, basically. And why personally, I think there is a personal element also included. Sweta has kindly mentioned it. I've been involved in Ghana since many years, and I think I'm not sure if I would do the same thing if I would not have been in Ghana in 2008. I've co-founded a project really totally privately with two other ladies whom I did not at all know at that time. One could say this is totally naive, and another one could say this is based on deep trust and faith. And we had nothing basically. Now we have a team of 10 people on a monthly payroll on site. Totally local team, the UNICEF collaboration partner. We've won many awards. But I'm just mentioning this because it's had such a profound impact on my further life. Because when I came back in 2008 from Ghana, my boss, I was working in a private bank in Zurich at that time. He said, "Well, Christine, you come back from Africa. We have this weird request from a family office on the table. They want to structure to their financial return in the fund, a social return. You look into it. You come from Africa. Nothing to do with Africa. Family was from India. But this is how I slipped into it. And I was like in the world of impact investing. And I was so hooked by that topic because I... time of the financial crisis at that time, and I realized, wow, now finally this all makes sense. Really, this all this financial know-how that I've built to combine with a social and environmental angle. Then my journey continued in that field, and I never went back.
No, I think it's a journey with one way ticket to impact investing. Thanks for sharing, Christine. That's amazing. That's really amazing. Team, could you also please introduce yourself and tell us what has been your journey and what was not said yet? How did you end up here as an entrepreneur? And
Sure. So hi, everyone. Also from myself, my name is Tim. I'm 34, one of the three founders of Vital. And as mentioned before, we operate a digital deposit-free reusable packaging solution for restaurants, canteens, and supermarkets to really eliminate this single-use plastic waste that we generate with takeout and delivery food. And my journey to impact investing or impact entrepreneurship, I would have to say, really comes from the other side compared to Christine. So I did study business to start off with. I also studied public policy and social cognitive psychology. But then in 2011, I started my first social business, which was a nonprofit organization. And I basically scaled a franchise network for student-run kiosks. So there were small kiosks at German high schools, 14 in total, that were operated by the 9th and 10th graders, really as a mean to teach entrepreneurship, to learn about business and prepare them for the job market. And as that was a nonprofit, I really made the experience that, if fundraising is hard, if you, in order to scale your impact, have to be fundraising all the time, talking to different foundations, to donors, and so on, that's really keeping you from scaling your impact. And that's the one thing, or one of the things I took away from that experience was that I really wanted to start a social business where the business model directly generates impact. And I mean, I'm very, very happy and thankful that with Vital, we have exactly this setup of aligned incentives between our ecological impact and our revenues and our business model. And that's just a very, incredible power that we generate with this business model, as everyone on the team is super motivated.
And tell us a bit more, like your website mentioned that you can take away food without garbage. So can you please explain how exactly you do this? How does it work?
Yeah, sure. So Vital is a business model innovation, and we bring into reusable packaging the operating principle of libraries. So for consumers, you either buy a membership card from us or you download our app for free. And then you can take out food containers, reusable food containers, at any partner of ours. We currently have 1,300 partners all around Germany and Austria. And you can borrow them for free without paying a deposit. But this free borrowing period is limited to 14 days. So that means that if you keep it for longer and you do not prolong the borrowing period, you automatically buy the container. And this has two very fundamental advantages. One is that your reusable option is for free at the point of sale. So a lot of people are able to choose reusables over disposables. And the second advantage is that since you want to use our service for free, you return the package. And we see that more than 99% of our containers are returned within this free borrowing period of 14 days. And on average, already after 3 days. So this makes us a super efficient reusable system, even more efficient than the well-established German beer bottle deposit system. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the way to go to reduce all this disposable packaging waste, that we offer reusable solutions that are super efficient, but also super convenient to use. And therefore, for example, we collaborate with the Rewe Group and other supermarket chains, but also delivery services like the Gorillas app, where you can return Vital containers after or with your food delivery.
And what happens to this 1%? Like when they bought it, then they can still use it and come to the shops with this to refill, or what's happening?
Excellent question. So as I mentioned before, we always want to align economic incentives with the impact incentives. And if you forgot or you went on vacation and you didn't prolong your borrowing period, then you buy the containers and we offer you basically to return them into the system and get a credit for in the app that you can use to order food or prolong your next container. So basically you buy a container like a regular lunch bowl for 10 euros. But if you return them anytime after the free borrowing period ended, you get a credit of 5 euros that you can spend inside the app to order food.
Okay, that's amazing. That's really amazing.
That's really good. But you are also in Zurich, or in which cities, countries are you right now present?
We're currently operating in Germany and Austria, not yet in Switzerland.
Okay. What stops you to cross the border here?
Well, to be honest, I think, we're still a very young company. We are growing quickly. So since the first lockdown in 2020, we're growing by 10% week over week, which really is incredible growth. But there are also, of course, we cannot be everywhere already. And especially in Switzerland, you would probably have to offer the app in three different languages. You would have to cater for a different kind of currency. So
I think languages, huh?
Sorry, say it again.
There are four official languages in Switzerland.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, but since we already offer it in German, so we would have to translate it to three other and so on.
Language.
But no, I mean, for sure, we also want to help eliminate single-use plastic waste in Switzerland. But we're just not operating there yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're most welcome, because here is so much single-use plastic, you wouldn't believe it. Doesn't matter where in which supermarket you go, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Should I?
No, Christine, I want to ask.
No, I want to ask Christine. You are the most powerful, really powerful, motivated and dedicated person I know in impact investing, you know, really.
I fully agree.
Okay,
yeah.
We too think that you are. And we wanted to ask you also, how was the journey till you get where you are right today? Was it easy, hard, and what were the issues on the way you faced, and how could you manage to overcome that?
Thanks, Sveta and Ben. Oh, you're so lovely. I must say, I come from a very entrepreneurial family, actually, and I grew up in an entrepreneurial environment. And I always thought at a certain point I want to really found my own company and build a great team. But when you then really start, you see very quickly that entrepreneurship is not glamorous at all from the very beginning, right? So you basically go through your personal J curve. I think that is important. I think when I reflect, when we have founded G Impact Capital in 2017, I think it was probably the most daring adventure of my life. But when I reflect now, I also think it has been the most impactful, the most intense, but also the most joyful journey and decision so far in my life, definitely. I think one thing that I would like to share, and I wonder what Tim will say, but I think it's also a lot about personal resilience, right? I mean, Tim mentioned it also from his perspective. Fundraising is, of course, always challenging, right? And so I think there you just have to be really resilient. And when you know basically what drives you, then it's basically anyway unstoppable, because you need to go on. You need to continue. On the other hand, I think it's important to, despite all the passion, despite all the motivation also of the team, it's important to continuously hold on, to reflect, to go inwards, to realign basically, and then to go on basically with full speed again.
Right. So yoga helps, right? I know you're also a yoga practitioner.
Indeed, yoga and meditation help a lot.
I think exactly. For any entrepreneur, you are at one or another time, you are at the point that you need to do that. Otherwise, to make the next step and to continue can be very hard. Isn't it, Tim?
For sure. I mean, that's one of the key qualities I think you have to bring into the game as an entrepreneur, that you get up when you are knocked down or there are obstacles in your way, you jump over them and stay focused on your vision.
Exactly.
Great. But go.
I always have to ask permission,
of
otherwise
course
I'll
not.
Be in trouble.
No.
So when you do a company, Tim, in your case, you have what very often people have a very good idea or a vision, and they have a product or a service. But slowly, it sometimes turns out that the idea or the vision could be very good. I don't know if you went through, we had this with the soya oil, that everybody found it an amazing idea, wonderful idea. They started focusing it. Everybody started investing in it. We also invest everything. Now it turns out that the soya oil is doing a lot of damage in the rainforest in Indonesia, in Amazon, things like that. So there's two aspects to it. One is the end-to-end, the supply line. So do you really keep an eye on the end-to-end of your supply line, that it's not having anywhere in the supply line a negative impact on the surrounding or on the environment? And the second is, do you also think about long-term, that your product will not also cause long-term damage or something?
Yeah, no, I mean, very, very important points that you raised there. And yes, we do... we are more selective concerning our suppliers. So I think we are as vital. We are the operating system for reusables, which means we purchase the reusable containers from manufacturers. And currently we're only working with manufacturers from Europe. And we also, for example, our Dutch manufacturer, they work together with an institution with disabled people, for example, to do the packaging, or we need to have a QR code on each of our containers so we can basically operate the library system. So that's where they get help from the institution with the disabled people. So we are taking care watching out that we kind of get beneficial manufacturers and suppliers as well. And then looking at the long term, what you mentioned. What is also really important for us is that we can actually, I mean, we close the loop with our cycle very early, right? So it's reusable packaging usually takes a little bit more resources than disposable package in production. But then the product is made and you can use that product a lot more often, which is way more efficient from a resource perspective. And then at some point, of course, we serve food in our containers. So at some point, people use a knife or whatever, and it just doesn't look good to be reused again. So we really wanted to have a very high quality material for the bowls, so we can recycle them and make new products and ideally, of course, new bowls out of the materials of our used bowls. And so those, I think, are really important points, that we really follow the circular economy principle firsthand with our product, which is reused, reused, reused. And then at the end of life, we recycle it to make reused material, which is then basically closing the circle another time.
It's basically like cradle to cradle concept, right? In circular economy.
Yes.
That you're using. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Maybe Sveta. Sorry, please.
No. Please go ahead.
Sveta and Ben. I thought maybe I can add to that what you have just shared, Tim. Basically, that when Tim and I and our teams basically have been in close negotiations and conversations, and our day started sometimes at 5 o'clock in the morning, when it just before the closing. What we have actually signed next to the basically share purchase agreement, right, is also a letter on our impact collaboration. And on this journey that Tim just described, basically also being and even becoming more and more transparent, more conscious on the, let's say, sourcing side, supply chain side. We also will support, of course, as an impact investor, right, in that whole value creation approach, and not only assist on the measurement side, but also, on assisting on various ends, for example, on looking, I'm speaking generally now for our investee companies, assisting them to become, for example, helping them to make their teams, for example, or their boards more gender balanced, more inclusive, looking really deeper also into the supply chains, basically investing with a gender lens and also it's kind of a biodiversity lens, but we call it multi-species lens. So Anita, my business partner, doesn't have any children, but she has 80 beehives, which are kind of her children. And so we are really, really also deep into the that biodiversity angle. And so there's a close, what I just want to say is basically there's a close collaboration between the companies and us, and also between Tim and his team, and on various different ends.
I think this is a great example of what we are also teaching our students, that when you have the right investor who is aligned with your mission, you get really not just the money, you get enormous amount of support, expertise, and you are there for each other if it's needed, right? So this is amazing that the mission is supported by the investor and not only profit side. So, team, you are very lucky.
And one of the points,
no, I think, for sure.
Yeah, there was an article. I had quoted last time. I forgot. It mentioned that the most important, the finance or the amount of money is the least important what you get from the investor. It's written by somebody who is very famous. He has written one of the world's most renowned investment book.
To always ask. The investors, or they can support you. So it's a really big difference.
Exactly.
Kristen, you wanted to add something?
Yes, please, Sveta. Also to that discussion, because it's just in that flow right now, and it's interesting maybe for our listeners. I remember, Tim, when we spoke for the first time, right, everything had to go very quickly, and it was actually over Christmas. I was actually sitting on a Christmas dinner on the 26th, and Tim was sitting, and we were talking. And Tim said exactly what you've just mentioned. The first thing, we didn't know each other at all. He said, well, Christine, what can you bring to the table, right, in terms of value add? And I think this is very wise of Tim, because he chose his investors exactly, all the other investors as well, right? Everybody should bring a value add. I think this is also where, how do you say that in English? Die Spreu trennt sich vom Weizen, but where you can really distinguish basically as an investor, if you're talking to a really interesting company, because they also really want to see the value add, right, that you bring to the table.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very wise advice to everyone who is looking for funds.
But the money is needed. Just to state that clearly as well, right? It is the combination. And of course, sometimes an introduction, a sparring of ideas, a discussion is much more valuable in the end. But as a startup company, you have to invest, you have to pay salaries, so you definitely do need the money too.
Exactly.
This is why we want this all behind me. You know, maybe you recognize big banks there also to get on board much more than they already do.
They are slowly.
Yes, they are, but
still very slow.
I mean, talking in the amount of the banks and how much they're doing, they could do much, much more. So, but Kristin, I have another question for you, because you've been in this sector for a very long time already. And so what was your experience? How the change on the market was happening? You know, was it like how financial institutions became to change? When was this pivotal point that suddenly people started not to laugh at you when we talk about impact investing, but kind of say, get more interested, you know? And what was your experience in that?
Yeah, thanks, Sveta. I think you mentioned actually before a shift of consciousness. I think actually that is one thing that one can observe right now, that people, young people, but also older people, are getting more conscious in their decisions, in their like personal buying decisions, but also when it comes to their investment decisions. Impact field, as we all know, is still small, but it's growing. I think a turning point? Well, or, you know, a point where all of a sudden there was more demand. I think this also went line in line kind of with the climate. I mean, anyway, right? I mean, it's totally undeniable that we have a climate crisis, but also with the works of Greta and the likes, right? What we mm-hmm. saw with the climate strikes, all of a sudden, well, there was at least on the climate side, this increased mm-hmm. awareness. And then with Corona, all of a sudden, you know, everything was out of the media again. Mm-hmm. And this was, of course, a problem. On the other hand, I've realized that investors, the interest is definitely here, stronger than ever before. I mean, like over the last years, there was a lot of talk in the sector, but now you can really see people are really walking the talk. They start to walk the talk. We've written a white paper on the topic last year for the Bertelsmann Foundation, exactly on the topic, how to increase basically engagement and impact investing. And, so I also think with the, exactly what you are doing, Sveta, right, and Ben, with the Impact Investing School. So it's just, you know, it's like organically growing. And so there is much more awareness. And it's totally undeniable that the investor interest is there.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, both of you in your answering your questions earlier mentioned the COVID or the impact of COVID. Mm-hmm. Tim also mentioned and Christine, you also mentioned. Can you say a bit more about how both of you, how your businesses got impacted by, or your investment firm got impacted by COVID?
Mm-hmm. Tim, would you like to start?
Yeah, I'm happy to start. So I think in the really early times of COVID, when the pandemic hit, there was huge insecurity in the gastronomy scene. And people were really focusing, of course, on surviving basically that period. And a second thing that we had to take into account is that we started from basically our own lifestyle, right? We worked as consultants. We did the typical business lunch. We took out food from the restaurant. And this the people didn't go to the office anymore. They were in home office. So basically, we were very, there was just a very uncertain and very high uncertainty in the beginning. So in March, April 2020. And we were really thinking, will that potentially kill our business? But then it started around May 2020. The restaurants really focused on to-go food. They were allowed to do takeout and delivery food. And that, of course, was booming very, very highly and then also impacting us positively. So there was for sure a net positive effect, in particular also because lots of company restaurants and canteen players, they started to offer to go and delivery food, and they, of course, didn't want to choose disposable packaging. So, as I think mentioned before, starting from May 2020, we're now growing with 10% a week in terms of impact transactions, right? So number of replaced disposables, and that's just very, very cool to see and definitely a net positive effect from the Corona time.
That's great to hear, you know, and I think when the business is set up right and you can, you know, adjust it also if something happens like that and still have positive social environmental impact, this is exactly what we need on this planet.
Exactly.
But guys, I think everyone wants to know now, how did you find each other? Who approached whom and how did this marriage happen?
And the procedures. I want to know how, Christine, what was your procedure?
Wait, these procedures. Let's first, how did they find each other?
Well, actually, I found Tim, and I'm very lucky for that. By the way, maybe I actually have to quickly, before add to what you've just asked before, you know, how did Corona impact your fund? Maybe very briefly. So on our end, of course, probably fundraising is, when you can't see people, it's definitely sometimes more challenging than, you know, when you can only see them online as if it would be in real life. But on the other hand, even like via online talks, it went very well. And I must say from the company side, we had no issue at all because, you know, I was speaking before, we're looking really for core regenerative companies where the impact, and I think one can really see that also on Tim's business, is vital, where the impact is really inbaked. We call it always like inbaked, like in a bread, inbaked impact into the product or into the service, right? And for example, we were, at the time I did not know Tim yet, and that was in, fall 2020, in the height basically of the Corona crisis. We were talking to a Swiss-based company, and we were actually already very far in the due diligence, and we wanted to invest in that company. But that company did so well because of Corona. They had such a high turnover that they were saying, honestly, we don't need this extra money. So we have seen that the companies we are investing in had not really an issue with Corona. That was at least our observation. And how I found Tim, well, that's actually also very cool because it's through collaboration, something that happens actually in the impact sector, which is very cool. A colleague from a Swiss-based VC fund, a climate VC fund, they have actually shared the deal with us. They invest earlier than us. And we thought, oh, that looks really interesting. And we're actually screening many, many, many companies. Anita is in the lead for the pipeline building and for the screening. And we have screened last year, I think, more than 800 deals. And we only really engage in conversations when we are really, really interested. And So basically I found Tim through a deal sharing through a colleague.
So what caught your interest then out of these 800? Why them? Why not others?
What I found totally interesting Tim's and Vital's business. but really on the business model was basically that transformative impact, that really deeply circular business model. As we all know, maybe Tim can share a little bit on that, that there is this EU ban upcoming, right? Should be in the next days, I think, for single-use plastics throughout the whole European Union. So this transformative impact on one hand, and on the other hand, also this really scalable business model, this as a service business model that is scalable. So we found that combination extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm. Great. Tim, how was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, to be fully honest, I think what is always important when you do fundraising for your business, that you also connect with the investors on a more personal level, or you kind of get back the right vibes, right? And I think that was definitely the case with Christine and her team, and they also, I mean, really when discussions were not so they really engaged and were motivated and were following us closely to make the deal. And that was super positive, of course. And therefore, I mean, Christine already mentioned, right? You don't want to call people that you don't like on the day after Christmas and these kind of things, but you do when you like them, right? And that's, I think, one of the points where you can see that there was a connection. And in the end, as Christine mentioned, I think what we're in a position to do, and I mean, obviously that's still a vision, that we can not only replace single-use packaging waste, but we can also shape the behavior of consumers, right? So with our consumer app, we do is we celebrate returns, we celebrate conscious, environmentally friendly behavior. And I think that's reinforcing, and we're trying to make it fun to act sustainable and of course make it convenient. And I think that is really, if we can only inspire a couple of more consumers to act sustainably, if we can inspire some more companies to really take that angle of seeing sustainability and convenience going hand in hand, then I think the impact that we achieve is way beyond our own business.
Completely.
Actually, it would be cool just, you know, on the, here on the right-hand side of mine is actually Sprungli on Paradeplatz, you know. And I was always so angry because people are going for lunch and buying these plastic boxes, and it's happened every day. So it would be cool to see you maybe in a couple of years there.
We're working on it.
Yes. So, but you have Christy, a question.
Just before, Tim, because you're mentioning the market, can you please share some market numbers with us? For example, how large is your market, or how much do you have you been able to impact? Do you have some of the numbers or something? How much have you impacted, or a kind
of? Yes. Yeah. I mean, so that's the very cool thing about our business model, that we have a digital library system. So every time someone uses our reusable containers, we know that we have saved a single use or replaced mm-hmm. a single use mm-hmm. packaging. And just in 2021 alone, we have already replaced more than 1.1 million single use items. So wow. That's super cool. Thanks. But we did celebrate the million quite nicely. But to be fully honest, if you look at the market, then just a tiny, tiny fraction. And I think that's also what's so motivating about the business, that the impact can be so much more. And as Christine mentioned, we are a platform business, right? We source the containers, we supply them to restaurants, and then in most cases we don't touch the containers again, because the consumer uses them, they return them, or they give them to the Gorillas driver to return them, and then it comes back to the restaurant where it's cleaned and then handed out again. So it's really, mm-hmm. We don't have to touch a lot of the containers again, which makes it super, super scalable. And I think that's really cool. And in terms of market size, I mean, in Germany alone, there are roughly 800,000 to 1 million food containers used every hour. So I mean, that also puts the 1.1 million into perspective. Because there is
very, very long
way to go.
You have a lot to scale up.
Yes.
You have big potential. Okay, I see. Kristen, we were touching the topic about procedure, right? And then I interrupted, Ben. I'm so sorry for that. Because I really love to know, what was the procedure before you invested in Team? We have a lot of entrepreneurs watching us, so they would really love to know, how is it happening in the practice that then it comes to the deal. So when the procedure ends up with a celebration.
Yeah, Tim was mentioning
before.
Yeah, exactly. Next year. So, I had to just laugh, because when Tim was just sharing and explaining, basically, he was also saying, so when times were like not so rosy, you didn't mention it like that, Tim, but in a very nice way. And I exactly knew what you meant, because, you know, due diligence is tough, is painful. And then, you know, I mean, also Tim and his team, they have to build a business, right? And we as a fund, of course, have a very stringent due diligence process, basically, meaning that we had to raise relatively many questions, and then also came back with additional questions even after the final IC meeting. And so from that perspective, it was always a very constructive dialogue, even if sometimes it was also I think quite stressful also for Tim to combine his business. And but I think a fundraising period for a business anyway is always, you know, there you're a little bit drawn out of the, let's say, current business until the round is closed, and then you can fully concentrate. It takes away basically management time, right? Mm-hmm. And the processes on our end, basically, when I summarize them very briefly, it's we have a two-stage due diligence process where we have five people in the investment committee, meaning we have two investment committee meetings where four out of five people in the IC have to vote for the deal. And this has to happen twice. And then we make, basically, we are the advisor, and then we make the official investment recommendation to the funds AFIM, basically, in Luxembourg. That's another step. And then basically the capital is called, and then the investment is made. So, basically.
Time, how long did it take, like the whole procedure and due diligence? Yeah.
For us, it, you know, the quickest we can do it as a fund with that basically two-stage due diligence process, if we give full speed in, I think the quickest we could do is like the absolute quickest is like 6 weeks, but I think more realistic is 8 weeks, and that's already super, super short. Eight weeks, yeah. And so, you know, for, and that's sometimes also a bit challenging for us as an impact fund, because sometimes, for example, in the round with Tim, right, there were other VC investors who don't have such a stringent due diligence process, and they are much quicker, right? And there's, of course, pressure from the companies who usually want to close the rounds as quickly as possible. But yeah, so in the end, I think we solved it perfectly. But yeah, it's always a very stressful time. We actually right now in the final, well, we have actually closed the due diligence round. We have already submitted a proposal for a forced investment to Luxembourg. And this is supposed to close in 2 weeks, mid of July. So yeah, again, quite stressful times, but yeah, all very positive.
Tim, I have a challenging question for you. Which documents did you have in your data room for due diligence process?
Which documents?
Yeah.
Many documents, of course. I mean, anything from like basically the certificate of forming the company, sample contracts with all suppliers and customers, of course, with key employees. Then, of course, financial information. Then with Chi, we also shared, of course, lots about our impact measurement and our impact data, our KPIs that we use to steer the company. So, it was of course, lots of documents.
Great. Then we are teaching the right things. So.
Exactly. So, Tim, I would like to know, so who do you see in your market as competitors, or do you have competitors, and or are they in the same sector or different
and
sector?
And also, in addition to that, maybe you should, or maybe you're already considering franchise to help you to scale it up in other countries and to increase the impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let me start with the first question concerning competition. So of course we have competition. I mean, if we wouldn't have competition, probably we wouldn't have a good business model. But so I think what really is, I mean, if you look at it from a European perspective, then like all the countries in continental Europe, we have an advantage globally in sustainability oriented business models. And then we have the EU in particular that really wants to shift towards a circular economy. And then beneath that shift, we have Germany really as one of the leading countries when it comes to reusable packaging. I mean, the German consumer is really used to returning glass bottles, reusable stuff to the supermarket. And that's super helpful. And therefore, also the German market for reusables is the most advanced, the most mature market. And what is really interesting is that since deposit is so common in the supermarket for beer bottles, water bottles, and these kind of things, most of our competitors inside of Germany, but also abroad, they're looking at deposit models for reusable packaging solutions. And that's inefficient because deposit models are not an attractive or an efficient and convenient way to operate reusables. Because in the beginning, at the point of sale, you have to pay something extra as a consumer. So maybe the €1 extra for your reusable coffee cup is not a big deal. But if you order food for your family and then you suddenly have to pay 40, 50 euros deposit, that's a big thing. And you think twice whether or not you want to use reusables. So we take that out. And then also in a deposit model, there's no incentive for quick returns, because you get the same deposit amount back independent of when you return. And as a reusable packaging solution, you really want an efficient network so you can really maximize your revenue, but also your impact from the single reusable container. And therefore, we don't believe in this competition. And then, so I think what would be the biggest competitors, and of course the dominant players in the market right now, are companies offering single-use packaging and so-called biodegradable single-use packaging, which, to be stated clearly, is greenwashing, like typical greenwashing, because obviously, I mean, we in Germany have one of the most sophisticated recycling industries, and we cannot recycle biodegradable packaging waste. We have to burn it with all the other trash. So that really doesn't solve the problem. And therefore, we do see competition, but we see far less competition in this digital packaging as a service space that we are in. There are a few smaller players as well, but we are by far the biggest one. And therefore, we really hope to stay the market leader and develop our business inside and outside of Germany.
And what about the franchising?
Yeah, that's a very good point, because due to, and Christine mentioned that it's EU-wide regulation that's starting from tomorrow, single-use plastic packaging from polystyrene, I think is the English word, is forbidden in the EU. And therefore, we see also in other countries, smaller teams popping up, starting to offer reusables. And currently, we follow the strategy that we contact them, we work or we try to get to know them, and then really select the best local teams abroad and convince them to work under the Vital brand and work for us, basically, to expand into other countries. But just to also state it clearly, since Germany is the most mature market, that's really where our full focus is.
Mm-hmm. How big is your team now, Tim?
So we currently have a team of 55.
Okay. And I just wanted to ask, do you also, when you are making a contract with a restaurant, or do you also insist or promote that they should go more and more into waste, reduction of food waste and things like that, and to be more and more sustainable? Do you also advise that to your partners? Or insist on it?
No, there are no hard criteria. Of course, there is some sort of self-selection bias, of course, right? So that the gastronomists that don't care at all about the environment, they're usually not yet customer of ours. We don't have any. We don't insist on anything. But of course, we help them. So, for example, since we also offer pre-ordering, which means that consumers can order their food via our Vital app. So that's, for example, also a good opportunity for restaurant partners, for example, at the end of the day, offer reduced prices for what they have left. So really to eliminate food waste.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Christian, now I have a lot of questions to you again. As your font is still relatively new one, how could you overcome the fear of the investors and the perception in this new field? Are your investors more like the completely new in impact investing sector, or the ones who did a lot of investments already?
Yeah, very good question. So I think what for us was utterly important was the trust and support of our seed investors, basically, that we had, right? Because their investment was like truly not only investment in our fund, it was a catalytic investment. Or it had actually a catalytic effect as well. And I think, you know, maybe to share for other potential fund managers out there or teams who want to actually launch a fund, I think it's extremely important to become live, to really show to your investors that you are actively building a great portfolio, a great diversified portfolio. I mean, for us, yes, we've only launched the Burning Issues Impact Fund end of last August, basically. But we are now implementing the fourth transformative investment. And from that, we go, basically. We are still in fundraising on one hand, but on the other hand, we built a portfolio. So I think it's important to be able to demonstrate that you can really build a very interesting portfolio for your investors.
Absolutely. So to talk about performance, of course, it's too early, but what is your expected performance that you promise to investors?
Now Tim is getting nervous.
that's okay. I mean, performance is important for us too. And that's, performance for us means at least double benefit, right? So therefore, no worries.
Exactly. I love what Tim says, double benefit, right? Because this is exactly how we are thinking, because we totally believe in that those companies actually are performing better also financially because they have these transformative new business models. So we basically promise our investors, right, to enable them to create deep impact alongside attractive financial returns. And by that we mean minimum net IRR between 8 to 10%. We actually believe we can distribute more, but probably this is also our female powered approach in the team that we are saying we love actually to over deliver and not to over promise and really stick to that what we are promising. But definitely we want to show that today you can really create a very attractive deep impact portfolio. It's nothing to do with impact washing when we talk about impact, and it's really impact alongside attractive financial returns. So this is today definitely possible.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a very good point I wanted to ask, because this is more of a bit of a general question. Because my personal fear is that this sustainability and impact are becoming such hot topics now that every Tom, Dick, and Harry wants to jump in. But I'm worried that the water will get muddied. And what I mean is that the market is getting so much flooded with so many so-called impact funds and products that the investors won't be able to differentiate what is good and what is bad. And we may end up in a kind of subprime problem when the funds get filled with weak underlying projects, which may cause, on long term, a loss of investors' money, and even worse, loss of trust in this, in our sector, in the impact sector. So what do you think about it?
It's a very interesting comparison, Ben. I've never thought about that comparison. So you should write an article on that, because I think it's really interesting, because I've thought a lot, of course, about the topic of impact washing, because this is also what I've experienced over the last years tremendously, right? From greenwashing to rainbow washing to impact washing, does not matter how you call it. But I think for the investors, it's really important that this sector is growing with integrity. And right now, this is not guaranteed. This is exactly what you're saying, because everybody is jumping on the bandwagon of impact investing because it's cool, because it sells nicely. But and investors are confused, and they're saying, so honestly, what is this impact all about? And honestly, I doubt if impact investing will still be called impact investing in 10 years. I'm not too sure. But what I think is very important, and I think that differentiation will come within the next 5 years, one clearly has to distinguish, and there also the EU taxonomy from the European Commission goes into the right direction, but is much too weak to basically differentiate, let's say, responsible funds from sustainable funds and from impact funds, right? From this passive to the much more active approach, meaning, for example, when you call yourself as an intermediary, an impact fund manager, and you're managing an impact fund, then you should not only help the companies to measure their impact, but you should also, as a fund manager, really stipulate that intentionality, you know, about this positive impact creation on the social or environmental side in your fund documents. So basically in the prospectus or in the documentation. And then you could easily, for example, adhere to higher standards, for example, tying your fund carry to the creation of positive impact outcomes. What we do, by the way, not too many fund managers do that yet, or that you adhere to the IFC principles. And, you know, there are many other things where you can go through the sector with more transparency and with more integrity. And I think that is very important for the sector, for this so young sector still.
Yeah. Christine, I wanted to just to make sure that I understood it correct. So you help with impact measurement to team. How does it happening? So who is measuring impact and like who set up the standards or like acceptable KPIs for measuring impact? You as an investor or team provided you the metrics. So how did that happen? Because it's also important.
Yeah. Maybe I can start, Tim. I think it's definitely a collaborative effort. And I think this, from my perspective, at least, I think it's very important that this should all be, you know, created in a dialogue, because in the end, it should be for the benefit, of course, for the company, right? And there it's all about collaboration, about sitting together, discussing which impact KPIs or impact targets basically could make sense. In Vital's case, it was great because as Tim shared, and maybe you want to add to that, Tim, but Vital has this great electronic platform already anyway existent. So it was relatively easy with the team of Vital to define the KPIs. And yeah, so there we made a very quick process, actually. Yeah. Maybe you want to add to that.
Yeah, I know. I think exactly. I mean, there are a couple of different perspectives that we can take when we look at our impact with Vital. And I think that was very important that together with G Capital, we discussed like which ones are the ones that are most important to us, which are the ones that are most important for G, and then really define collaboratively the key KPIs that we want to track. And this really, I mean, for us, our North Star KPI is the number of transactions, so the number of replaced mm-hmm. single-use packages, and that directly links to our revenue as we are paid per transaction by the gastronomy. So therefore, I think, there's really, it is rather easy to measure our impact, at least our immediate impact, and then at some part or at some time in the future, you can look left and right to see where we create more impact. For example, what I mentioned before in terms of behavioral change that we also want to induce in other people.
Yeah. Tim, are you using logic model or what are you using to measure impact also?
Well, I mean, we really directly measure the impact, right? So every time someone checks out a reusable food container, there's basically an electronic transaction. So
it's your outputs, right? So you're correctly mentioning a direct impact outputs, but what are your outcomes and impact? Like on a long term.
You mean like in a theory of change kind of.
Theory of change, yes. Some people call it logic model or impact chain, yes. So, what will be your impact?
So really, our core focus is on measuring the direct impact, so the direct volume of replaced single use containers, and we don't look that much further than that at the moment. Right. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at, for example, what I mentioned, the consumer behavior, mm-hmm. there we have a clear theory of change saying that we want to be basically the prime example and case in point where we show people that sustainability goes hand in hand with convenience, that it's super fun. So we give a lot of feedback in the app, communicate a lot with our users. We also do some gamification testing, for example, providing people with the opportunity to get a discount for their food order for themselves or donate the same amount to a charity and an anti-plastic project. And then we see, for example, and that's all what we already did in collaboration with the university, for example, that the people that, or most people, first of all, choose to donate, which is super cool and speaks to the first movers that are on our platform already. And then we see that just by offering that them this opportunity, that creates loyalty to use our service even more often. And I think this is something that is super nice, of course, for growing our business ourselves. But we really want to transform that to basically the more to motivate also to a more sustainable lifestyle that goes beyond our company. And I think that's where we have basically where we measure, okay, so this is what we do. This is how the consumer immediately responds, but that's also how it shapes his or her behavior in the following 12 months.
Mm-hmm. That's
and then,
amazing.
Of course, going further.
And what I wanted to know is also because thanks to the COVID and everything, there's now so much this kind of post-order companies and things. And you are also doing a lot of, for your products and your services, a lot of traveling. Are you also measuring the CO2 emission of the transport, which is being used by the customer or the restaurant in your...
Yeah, so very good point. We, of course, whenever the team travels, we take the train and make sure that we use like environmentally friendly mobility options ourselves. So what we have in terms of inner city logistics, redistributing, for example, from the Gorilla storage containers to our restaurant partners, we have e-cargo bikes. So that's very important to us. And then in terms of looking at further measures of transport, most other logistic ways are covered by the consumer that goes there anyway, right? So you return the container when you get new food at the restaurant. The Gorillas driver, for example, that delivers your groceries, he always rides back empty to their storage, and he has to do it anyways. And now he can take like vital containers with him or her. So I think we do look at that, and we make sure that whatever we can do and is under our influence, that we find sustainable solutions for that. But it's not something that we measure as accurately as we measure the core impact of avoided disposables.
Maybe Peter and Ben, I can quickly add two small things to what Tim has just shared. I think, we have been in very close alignment also with your colleague Fabian on the impact measurement side. And there, what we also did is basically we aligned the three impact targets that we have defined with Vital to the IRIS metrics, you know, to like a kind of one of these standard metrics out there from the CHIN, right? The IRIS metrics from the CHIN. Mm-hmm. And then another thing, but it's somehow related to what also Tim has just said. I think it's very important to share maybe for our audience. For us as an impact investor, what we totally loved on Vital and on what Vital has told us basically in a conversation, and we know, right? I mean, of course, we are also promising our investors attractive financial returns. Also, Vital wants to grow, needs to grow. It's a no-brainer, right? But the super interesting thing is, and that is why we love Vital, that Vital actually told us, right, Tim, that you've said, well, you know, of course we want to grow, but our mission is not to bring as many bowls basically into the system, basically to grow exponentially. No, of course we want to grow, but we actually want to let those bowls circulate in the system as efficiently as possible. And that is extremely interesting from a, let's say, regenerative growth perspective, from a circular economy perspective as an impact investor, that there is, of course, growth, but very thought through. And that is really cool, I think.
That's a perfect input, you know, because... as any social entrepreneur, you must ask yourself the question, how big you want to grow, right? So you are still creating the same impact, you stay sustainable and not just running after profit at the end, you know? So it's a very important point.
And that's maybe just to make a quick point on again, why the digital reusable model has so many advantages compared to a deposit reusable model. that in a deposit system, you don't have basically alignment between the incentives, because in a deposit model, you as a system operator cannot make money off the deposit, because in its nature, a deposit is always the same amount. So you have to charge membership fees or some other kind of revenue model to make sure that you as a system operator make revenues and can pay your salaries. And that I think is key, because in deposit models, you would just want to pump as many reusable containers in the system, and you don't care whether they're just standing around or they're actually used and replace single-use packaging waste. And that makes it so attractive to have a digital model where we are actually, as Christine mentioned, really capable of increasing the efficiency of the circular system.
Maybe you should teach Amazon.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a big thing. And if they would know what we know, how you really increase customer loyalty through reusable packaging, then I'm sure they would be knocking on our door trying to learn how we do it with Vital.
And what maybe it's not a discussion point for today, is that you are getting also a lot of customer data. So if I use your bowl, you know exactly which restaurant I prefer, which food I prefer.
You must not be the type of food, to be honest. I mean, we know the restaurant. That's true, and we see basically also where people like where bowls are returned and which restaurants are receiving more bowls in return than they give out, and these kind of things we do see, but no personal information.
Next time I go to Germany, I have to ask him where the good restaurants are.
Yeah, I can recommend you a bunch for sure. Please ask. Let me know when you come to Cologne or Berlin, and then we'll make sure to show you around.
Perfect.
Deal. It's a deal.
So, Christine, I wanted to ask you, on your website, you mentioned you invest in Europe in most burning SDGs and reverse climate change. Can you give some more concrete examples of how you intend to do that? And what do you mean by most burning SDGs? Because I thought all 17 of them are burning.
Some of them are burning more.
Yeah, good point, Ben. So basically, you know, when we have started, like, let's say in 2018, to put the fund strategy together, we were analyzing the SDGs, and we knew from the very beginning we want to invest in Europe, right? Here we have our track record. Here we have our best network. Another thing, maybe I should share it. I think it's also important when we want to reach the SDGs by 2030, it's also important, I think, to really create impact in front of our doorstep. Right. And I mean, personally also involved in developing countries in Africa. And I think this is utterly important to also make investments there. But also we need to invest in transformative companies, businesses here in Europe in order to make that shift happen, actually. Mm-hmm. And we've analyzed a study from the Bertelsmann Foundation called SDG Index and Dashboards Report. And they have analyzed for every country in the world. For some, there were no data available, but basically for most of the countries in the world. So for example, for Switzerland, very neatly on one page, which ones of the 17 goals are the burning ones in Switzerland? They are flagged red, and then it's on a traffic lights, and it's red, orange, yellow, and green. And we've seen, not surprisingly, that in Europe, climate action is flagged red. Also, circular economy, conscious commerce is the whole plastic topic is a red topic, a burning issue, basically. But what we did not expect in the first place is SDG number 2, zero hunger, is also flagged red. And so, because we saw it's a typical bottom of the pyramid topic. So, and then when you look closer, you see, you know, you've spoken about it, Ben, today, right? The whole food waste topic, or what we've seen through the pandemic, the rise of alternative protein, basically. Those are all, important issues here, also in Europe. And we've defined our let's say, in impact verticals of the lenses through which we invest through those burning SDGs. So basically, we invest in companies that provide solutions on the, let's say, green innovation angle, on the conscious commerce, circular economy angle, and also on the food technology angle. That is what we mean when we invest in the burning issues of our time. And actually, Burning Issues Impact Fund was our working title, and the fund is still called like that because, we thought this name is just, perfect for what we are really doing.
That sounds great. Thanks for explaining, Christine. And it was amazing with you guys. The time is running out.
And we still had so many questions.
Yeah. So you should come again maybe in a year or so to see how it's developed in your relationship. But as a tradition, we ask all our guests to give a final call to action to whoever you want to address it from your perspective, Christine, from you team. So please, a short message to our audience, whatever it is, call to action in impact investing. And ladies, team, you want to start?
Christine, you can also start, whatever you prefer.
Okay, call to action is, ladies and guys, start, walking the talk, become active. I think that's the most important thing. Even in your small private decisions of the day, become more conscious, become active. And I think that is already the absolute perfect step in the right direction. And optimism is a choice.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, perfect call to action. So I think start moving is more important than doing it perfectly, right? And then I think I would like to call each and everyone that is thinking about starting an impact business to just go on and start it, because it's an amazing journey. You learn so much. And I can only recommend now is a very good time to start. And so make sure you get on the road and start.
And for the audience, I think people who are looking for investment advice, Christine's company is called Chi Capital.
Chi Impact Capital.
I always forget. and Tim is from Vital. So anybody going to Germany, look for Vital.
And
get the Vital app. It's free, and really no need to use disposables anymore.
And read the book, if you didn't do that yet, of Conscious Investing, where Christine was a co-author of that amazing book. So thank you guys for joining us today. It's really amazing for the insights. I think very valuable for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much also, everybody. It was a big pleasure. Thanks, and happy Friday. And thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This was amazing. The both the project and Christine, of course, and being a foodie, this was my day. Christine is food and Tim from the restaurant. Perfect.
I'm happy to hear that. And we forgot to mention, actually, so both of you, Tim and Christine, you are, of course, invited to become members on Chamomile, honorary members. So please register and then we will upgrade your membership. And for those who didn't subscribe yet, please subscribe on our platform on YouTube. And we would be happy to see you as a user, of course.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Act with Impact. See you next Friday.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Svetlana.
And I'm Ben.
In season 2, we will be traveling around the globe, out of Switzerland, and bring amazing leaders from businesses, thought leaders, political leaders, of course, investors and experts.
We're working at implementing and realizing all the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, better known as SDGs.
And they are also making profit.
Hello. I am Amina Gurifakim, and I'm the 6th president of the Republic of Mauritius.
My name is Parvati, and I'm a musical artist and the founder and CEO of Parvati Foundation.
I'm Michael Lichtenstein. I'm an entrepreneur here in this side. I'm running on one side financial services, a company.
You know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing.
So join us to discover Impact Investing ecosystem.
See you every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central European time at Swiss Impact with Benefits.
See you on Friday. Act with impact.